Hello and welcome to the Doula Tribe podcast. I'm Tess and I'm from the Nurture Doula Tribe. I'm a postpartum doula, a mother, and I'm Irish. We will be focusing on mothers, families, birth, parenting, and the postpartum period. I'll be diving into lots of topics around raising children. I want to speak to inspiring people and I want you to learn something. So make sure you tune in. Find me on Instagram and subscribe to this podcast. See you soon. Meet Beck. She's a highly sensitive, heart-led NLP master practitioner, an intuitive energy coach, a writer, a speaker, and a circle facilitator. Beck is known for her dynamic and confident presence, and she uses her expansive skill set, including years of experience in crisis social work, to cultivate deeply moving, reverent, and trauma-informed spaces. Beck runs circles in person in the Dandenong Ranges in Victoria, and she holds spaces online for women moving into the soul trader space, gently guiding them to come face to face with their potential and defy the boundary conditions of their thinking and create unbelievable results. She also creates epic discourse on the intersection of motherhood, feminism, business, and freedom. And you can subscribe to her work at beckcameron.substack.com. Welcome, Beck. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No worries. I was just reflecting on how I even met you. And I'm like, I think it was just fate that I came across your profile. And we have been connected now in a few things. And I've attended a few of your masterminds or
masterclasses.
Yeah. So it's been amazing, you know, watching and learning and doing all of the stuff that I meant to do as a businesswoman. But yeah, I am very, I suppose, grateful that I've met you as well.
Oh, thank you.
So thanks for coming on today. So I wonder, do you want to tell me a fun key story or something funny about your life to start off?
Sure. So I guess my story, I mean, depending on where I want to start off, it could be, you know, the whole entire podcast episode could be my story, but I'm assuming that's not what we're going to do today. So my story kind of starts, you know, we'll go the Cliff Notes version. Back in 2012, probably about just over 10 years ago now, I was, you know, you feel like there's this time in your early 20s where like just things click. You get your shit together. You've kind of gotten around being an adult and paying rent and studying and working and all those things. And I feel like it was that time where I'd just gotten my shit together. And then my sister-in-law passed away. So it was my boyfriend at the time, but my husband now, his younger sister passed away. And she was living with us at the time. And she actually took her own life. And for me, that started this journey, this deep, awful, painful, tragic, beautiful, exponential journey into personal development and mental health and mindset. And there were so many points and times over the next 10 years where I fell back down again. I recently went to a spinal flow practitioner. So I went to do some kind of energy healing and I was telling my story and she kept going to move on from the conversation. And then I was like, oh, and then this awful thing happened. Oh, and then just when I got my shit together again and this awful thing happened. So it's been a really, I don't even know how to say it other than it would be a really good book one day. A lot of pain, a lot of trauma, a lot of tragedy. I've had experiences with sexual assault. You know, a close friend of mine passed away when I was pregnant. But there's always been this enduring sense of being able to overcome anything.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that I then strive to teach and to support women to understand, because whilst a lot of my problems are still in the context of being a privileged white middle-class woman in a first world country, I don't think that means that your problems aren't real. And dealing with your problems within the context that you exist in is still a very real thing that we have to do. And so I'm very passionate about teaching people about an inherent sense of personal freedom, and that we can create that anywhere we go.
I love that. That is, yeah, wow, a lot of adversity there, but you know, you clearly have done the work and moved through it. So yeah, congratulate you on that.
Thanks.
It's a really special story as well, and I'm sure a lot of listeners will resonate with a lot of it. So yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that if they are struggling with those things, to reach out.
Absolutely.
And there's so much support out there now, but people don't often know where to look, don't they?
I think it's not even that we don't know where to look. No, I remember studying when I was a social worker, and I was sent by my workplace to do mental health first aid. And I was sitting there and they were explaining to me the pathology or the symptoms or what it looks like when someone has an eating disorder. And I was sitting there going, shit, I think I have an eating disorder.
So
part
weird.
Of it was yeah, it was a very surreal experience to be.
I've done that training
as
well, like, because I actually have the same background as you.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I worked for Berry Street for like 8 years.
Just
so I've done all those
inspiring
trainings
and a soul-crushing self-protection. But yeah, I think a lot of us don't actually recognize what's happening for us.
Yeah.
And when there is this disconnect and this lack of communication, and I know you would have seen recently, I've been talking a lot about getting off social media.
Yeah.
This disconnection we have from each other, or this disconnection we have through only seeing people through their highlights reel, means that we don't actually know or understand that, like, what you're experiencing is incredibly generalized and incredibly universal. And, you know, I think a lot of my friends or people I've spoken to, sometimes I even have to reflect back to them, like, hey, what you're experiencing is like anxiety. That's anxiety. That's not anything being wrong with you, those thoughts you're having, or depression, or, you know, symptoms of trauma. It's not that there's anything wrong with you. And I think that is the thing that we still don't have the language around.
Yeah.
I think we're very good at being like, oh, here's this service, and you see a psychologist or a therapist or, you know, any kind of support, but I don't think we still, as a community, especially Australia, have a great capacity to identify or self-identify or explain to people, or have the courage to explain to people what's happening on our internal landscape.
Yeah, of course. And like, you see that every day, don't you? Like, with, and it can be like a band-aid effect often in Western culture.
Absolutely.
And we're not getting to that root cause, which is, you know, emotional or physical pain, probably caused by your childhood. Like,
yeah,
mostly,
100%.
But yeah, we don't understand it because it's in our subconscious. And then we're like, oh, just living our life. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard
with all our maladaptive.
Yeah, lots of it. Yeah, mechanisms. We're so good at adapting, aren't we? Like, I've noticed that recently, our behaviors, you know, and it's often not real, like, it's all our just reality at the time. But yeah, I'm keen to like talk to you more about that. But do you want to describe to me about your work and what you're kind of passionate about right now? Because you have touched on the fact that you're getting off social media, how amazingly brave. I'm in awe of you. So tell me more about what you're doing.
So I've been working for the past 7 years for myself after working in the public sector and being a child protection social worker. I got burnt out to the point where I was like dissociative. I couldn't on the weekends, at night, outside of work, it was like I had a complete shutdown because I was so stressed and overwhelmed. And so I went from there to working for myself, starting out as a personal trainer, but then moving into coaching. The more coaching impacted my life, the more I saw my capacity to do the same thing. Not to mention, I wasn't a great personal trainer, and I was much more interested in talking to my clients. They were much more interested in talking to me. So it was mostly just us standing in the middle of the gym floor having a chat.
I love
but
that.
now, yeah, Now I work as a coach, and more recently studying neurolinguistic programming, NLP, and supporting an NLP training facilitator as a support coach. That has been kind of the cornerstone of my work now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whilst a lot of people have super negative associations with NLP, I think if I could come in today and simply encourage people to consider that NLP is a set of tools. It's like, you know, the hammer and the nail. It's not got any moral value attached to it. And whilst NLP has had a little bit of a dubious history with the way it's been used, if you don't know about the dubious history, don't even worry about it. But I
yeah,
know
I don't.
it was used a little bit. It became really popular in the 80s in sales.
Oh,
So
okay, yeah.
real estate and...
Oh, well, there's always a shadow of every light,
exactly,
isn't it? You know? Like,
exactly.
People are going to manipulate things all the time. So.
Yeah. The tools in neurolinguistic programming have kind of changed my perception of what healing, what change, what personal development can be, and just absolutely blown apart any boundaries that
Yeah.
I thought were there. So we use visualizations and hypnosis and, you know, deep questioning, quantum linguistics to support people to move out of problems that they might have existed in for a day, a month, a decade, their whole
Yeah.
entire life, all their past lives.
Amazing.
And it's been really powerful.
Yeah. And that's what I have seen you in action in, you know, the things that I've done with you, and it's been really inspiring, really. And I love that you can just move people from a place into, like, it just takes seconds often, like, and you can just move them into this space of, oh, that has changed. Like, I love that.
So a really big thing we talk about is you can't solve a problem within the problem, or you can't solve a problem within the energy or the place or space that created the problem. So a lot of what we do is taking people either through visualization or hypnosis to a place where they're able to view the problem from the outside or look at everything that's not the problem. So you'll hear, like, when I'm working with clients, talk a lot about the not problem, which sounds kind of strange, but if you have the problem, everything that is not the problem is the not problem, and that's where you find the solution.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit confusing,
Mm.
but a big part of NLP is entering the space where you feel confused, because when you feel confused, you've not got any attachment to the things that you know. And often it's that attachment to things that we know or things that we assume are real. And when we attach to those things, it's very hard to move and hard to shift. Whereas when we enter the space where we're feeling confused or feeling like we don't know the answer, that is when things that we may not have considered before have the capacity to kind of reveal themselves or come up. Or
That's cool. Like, I've been doing this circle on Tuesday nights, and we're doing archetypes. And I pulled a card last night that said, you know, something about confusion. Like, and so I'm actually in that confusion at the moment, because all my maiden has come up last week, and this week is my mother. And yeah, I'm really like, oh my gosh. I'm having to face a lot of stuff that I have buried. So it's been really interesting, like, you know, being in spaces where you can uncover certain things that have controlled your life, really. And it's a story that I've told myself that I don't need to anymore.
Oh, the stories that we tell ourselves, is it's amazing, because nothing is real, right? We are on a piece of rock floating through an incomparable solar system in an incomparable universe.
Yeah.
But we make shit mean the most ridiculous things. You know, in the end, sometimes, you know, I like to chunk things up all the way to, like, the absolutely surreal, conceptual. In the end, everything is meaningless. Okay.
Yeah.
So if I'm making too much meaning of something, or if something is ruling my life, it helps me having that perspective, being able to kind of zoom, like you'd say, zoom right out and go, like, does this actually mean what I think it means? Is this actually as important as I think it is? And I mean, the stories we tell ourselves, it's just a story.
Yeah.
You can change it.
Yeah. The thoughts that we have, like, it can be unfounded.
Absolutely. And it's all seen through the filters of your own experience. Like, you only see what you're filtering for. There's things that are unseen. There's things that you have deleted, distorted, or generalized.
Yes.
Based on your experiences that, you know, you've seen it one way, but it's actually not that way. That's just your perception.
Yeah, I love that. And it's really clear to me now as I run mother's circles with mums and babies, like, you know, the conditioning and often, like, you know, the stories that they have heard really affects their life and in their Absolutely. Vulnerability. And I just really want to change that for them and try and help them, like, to see the other way, because and get them to connect to their intuition, you know?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I wish I had someone to help me do that when I had my first baby.
Yeah. I think it's a really hard thing when you have a baby. Something I used to talk to my doula a lot about, you know, I'd done so much work in this field before having my baby 2 years ago. And even then I struggled. And so I think it's a hard thing when you're a mum, even if you're a mum who exists within these spaces and places that we talk about, intuition and connection to your body and self and embodiment, and all that kind of stuff. I think it's really hard to get pregnant. And then everyone's like, snap, connect with your body, connect with your baby, feel your intuition. And you might not have had a framework for that. And then to feel like there's this pressure, or in order to have a good birth or be a good parent, you need to connect with all these things. You're supposed to do that in 9 months. That's insane.
Yeah, and often it's not like that, and there's a lot of pressure. So I suppose that's a good segue into your birth. So do you want to talk a little bit about your little boy and how you felt when you were pregnant and stuff?
Yeah, Otis is nearly two. He's 20 months now, and yeah, it's been very intense parenting journey. We're very isolated. We live on the outskirts of Melbourne and we don't have much family around, so it's pretty much been him and I and dad, who goes to work in the office 3 days a week and home 2 days a week. Him and I for like 600 days 600 days straight. Yeah, the longest I've been away from him I think is 10 hours.
Oh wow.
In 2 years, and then you've got the 9 months pregnant before that. But I feel very grateful. I had this employer before I got pregnant who was a doula educator, and she was wild, and she would take me to doula trainings. And so I had like maybe a year or 2 years before I even got pregnant where I was suddenly exposed to this world of babies. Birth education and babies and doulas and the role of a doula and learning about the Australian hospital birth system and the faults in the system, and was able to make really educated decisions once we did get pregnant. So we thought we'd try getting pregnant in 2021 and had a margarita influenced try at Christmas 2020 and just got pregnant straight away. So I was really lucky in that sense.
Just so you know, my youngest son was conceived at the same time and he's the same age as Otis.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And
yeah,
we were actually we were down your way, I'm sure. We were staying in Rye. Yeah,
beautiful. apparently September's a really busy time because to have babies, because everyone gets knocked up at Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, Christmas and New Year's. So yeah, pregnancy was beautiful and wonderful. I think the hardest thing that I had to endure, and I remember it feeling like my first big test as a mother, when one of my best friends, again, I feel like this theme of mental health and suicide kind of follows me around a little bit. I don't know if that's just my lot in life in this incarnation or whatever, but yeah, one of my closest friends took her life when I was 5 months pregnant. And so there was this huge, huge theme of grief throughout that experience. So I think that was a hard journey. And I think that your body really does something in that moment to protect you from feeling the depths of that feeling. So I actually don't feel like that's really integrated. I feel like there's a lot of work to do to come back and acknowledge that experience. I think it kind of feels like it's on pause at the moment. And yeah, I don't really know where I'm at with that. But I think that's fine.
A protection method.
Absolutely. We don't need to process everything straight away.
Yeah.
We don't need to move past things. We don't need to get over things. You know, the time will come when it's time to do that.
Yeah.
But awesome. In September, I had an amazing home birth.
Wow. So did I.
Yeah. And yeah, it was just
doulas and everyone there.
Yeah, doulas, and I had a doula, I had my husband, and I had the most amazing home birthing midwives.
Amazing.
It was like nothing that I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
I definitely had a bit of an attachment, you know, you realize all these things post birth.
Yeah, of course.
To the Instagrammable, beautiful lights and the birth pool and the fairy lights you put them under the liner in the birth pool, and it's very photogenic. And the music, and I was going to breathe my baby out, and it was nothing like that at all. He was a compound presentation, so he had his hand up by his face, and so I actually feel like, or felt like, with every push, the way his arm was like he was like pushing himself back in.
Oh yeah.
And so it took freaking ever.
Yeah, first baby too though.
Yeah,
so they
yeah.
Take ages.
Well, I think I held him in. I thought I was pushing him out, but I think I was holding him in. And there was definitely a conversation with my midwives about 20 hours in, where it was like, if this baby, I remember my midwife saying, this baby really needs to be born now, Beck. And me being like, in my head, I gave up completely.
Oh,
and I
okay.
think that was exactly what needed to happen.
Surrendered.
Absolutely. I thought it was giving up. In hindsight, I can absolutely see it was a surrender. I remember thinking to myself, and this always makes me laugh, that I'm just going to keep looking like I'm trying. I'm going to keep making this face of like, I'm just going to keep doing that. And eventually someone will call an ambulance because they'll just call it. So I'm out. I'm just going to keep pulling the face. And
so it's kind of like a transition, right? Like,
oh,
friend.
I was absolutely in transition.
Yeah, yeah. But it was like a weird like presentation of a transition, because you usually were cursing and saying, give me the drugs, where you were just baking.
Yeah, well, I said just before that, I said to my husband, like, I think something's wrong, like, that I'm not, that it's not working.
Yeah.
And, like, that moment of clarity you have where you come back out of labor land and you have this sudden presence of mind and you're like, this isn't working. It's not, nothing's happening, blah, blah, blah. But I did have to have a catheter, which was like, oh, you never think you're going to want to tell people about that. But one of the benefits of home birth, you know, I can see how, especially with the trauma history, that could have been so traumatic.
Yeah.
But my memory of that is me lying on my own bed in my house with my two beautiful midwives, one of them doing it, and holding my doula's hand. And at one point they said, do you want Nathan? Do you want Nathan to come in? And I just turned around and was like, why the hell do I need him? And they all laughed and thought that was hilarious. But there's not a slightest inkling of a feeling of trauma or violation. And I think that's one of the beauties of home birth is if that had to happen in a different setting or scenario, that could have felt very invasive and very upsetting. But I have not the slightest feelings about that.
Because you trusted all those women.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I even asked, because I'd said no VEs, no vaginal examinations. And after I had the catheter, I just said to my midwife, I was like, can you just check that there's actually a baby there? Like,
you're up there anyway.
This isn't like a fake thing. I'm not like, just check, like, there's actually a baby. And she was like, he's right there.
So funny.
So yeah, I loved birth. I think it is an incredible tragedy to me that women are not supported to have an experience where they love birth.
Yes.
You hate it while you're in it. But I think, like a lot of people, you go through it, you come out the other side and you're like, I can do anything.
Yes.
I can do that. Whoa.
Yeah.
That was an amazing feeling.
Amazing. Yeah, I felt like that as well. So what, like how far between the catheter and in labor did you have him? Like
Oh, I
did you
think
have him
like
in the water or on land?
no. I think it was probably about 40 minutes. I
Oh.
think because I was really struggling to pee, and that I think was stopping him from moving down because I was drinking so much liquid and my doula was giving me smoothies and teas and things. And every time I got in the pool, things slowed down.
Yeah.
So as much as I wanted to stay in there, the advice I was given was like, I think we need to go and be uncomfortable. I think, yeah, last time I was in the pool, I just put my head under the water and screamed and then got out and tried a few positions around the house, walked around my dining table through a contraction, and then was in a supported squat, like off the couch in front of the TV. And that's where I had my baby.
Amazing. Yeah, some babies just need to be born on land, right? Like it's so funny. It's everyone's so different, and I have seen like, you know, water birth and the land births now at home, and it's just whatever works.
Yeah, absolutely. And the position that you need to be in that's best to support the position that they're in is so different for every baby.
Yeah, and your expectation of it that goes out the window.
The
So
calm.
Yeah. How was postpartum for you? Was it like, was it supported?
It was. I think the hardest thing for us postpartum and something that has complicated my journey of motherhood was around, I want to say, it's so hard. Time is just so wishy-washy when you think of birth. But I think about 3 hours postpartum, we were doing all the checks and he hadn't latched yet or fed, and but we've been trying the breast crawl, and my midwife tested his oxygen levels, and she was like, "Oh, it's borderline, so it's like just on the cusp of like what we would want it to be." And it was maybe 9 o'clock at night, and she just said, "No, I just don't want to leave you here all night. Like maybe if it was during the day and we could come back in a few hours, but I don't want to leave you here overnight. I'm not comfortable." And grateful to her for that, because I trusted her and I trusted her instincts. And if her instincts were saying that this baby needs a bit more support, then I trusted that that would be okay. And that's what he needed. So we had a post-birth transfer, and I think, yeah, that was the hardest thing I think I've ever done in my life. That was harder than birth. That was harder than losing people, was being at the hospital, which thankfully for me was 7 minutes from my house, being at the hospital 3 or 4 hours postpartum and looking at my baby through an isolate, an
Yeah, that
isolate.
one of them.
Yeah, the one and
the machine.
Having, yeah, and him being fed oxygen through a nasal tube and actually asking a nurse if I could touch my baby, hold my baby. So that was the hardest thing I think I've ever done in my life, was you just feel like you've lost a limb, like you've lost, like your heart is on the outside and you're asking if you can touch it,
I
hold
know.
it, engage with it.
It's crazy how the good girl comes back in when you're in those
Amazing.
environments. Yes.
Amazing.
I
And
felt
you're
that as
so
well.
vulnerable. You're so vulnerable. You're so tender. I think I asked if they had a wheelchair because I was very conscious of not standing up and being responsible, you know, for my pelvic floor. And one of the nurses saying, "Well, I can't wheel you around everywhere." And then having to shuffle from room to room and to the bathroom and go through all of that whilst sitting in uncomfortable hospital chairs. And yeah, it was something else. And that was right in the middle of like a lockdown here, so people, my husband could come in but no one else could come in, so my midwives and my doula were all supporting me virtually, which, you know, as much as it's amazing, it's not the same. And yeah, we had a couple of days at the special care nursery, but we came home on day 3 and he was fine. He had a little bit of jaundice and needed a bit of extra feeding. But I just remember sitting at home and holding him and thinking to myself, now you get to start, now you get to do it. And I just couldn't believe, like, I just remember looking at him and thinking, I can't believe you're mine. Like, I get to keep you. I can't believe I get to keep you. And I still feel that way. Like,
yeah,
even when
that's
he's
nice.
Screaming at me and yelling at me, and he's such a sensitive soul and he has big feelings at the moment, but I still feel so incredibly grateful that he chose me to be his mum and I get to walk beside him. I actually was at a show last night. I went to see Clementine Ford. She has a show going at the moment called Love Sermon, which is all about all the other types of non-romantic love, and oh, it broke me open, all about friendship love and motherhood love. And she said something about when you have children, you think that you are swimming beside them, but instead you're actually the ocean that they swim through.
Yeah, lovely.
Until they eventually find their, you know, their shore, their land. And once they leave, you can't follow where they go. And I just thought that is just exactly how it feels.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What a great quote. Like,
yeah.
Is that in the cinema or no? It's in Melbourne.
No, it's just a show. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's amazing.
Melbourne has all the good stuff. Not up here in the country.
Yeah.
That's okay. Well, thank you for being so open and, you know, raw with your birth story. Mm. It was beautiful and I loved hearing it. So thank you so much. I wonder about your journey from maiden to motherhood and how that looked. And I suppose from your background in coaching and, you know, those archetypes that maybe some listeners might not even understand, like what do you think your experiences around that?
I think that it's something so hard to quantify, and it's something that it was absolutely a part of our learnings back in the days of more village-like communal living. It's not been a part of the modern day learnings around birth, the journey that you take when you become a mother, and how you feel like you're a different person, and how you feel like you've taken this one way road, and there's no way back to the old self. There's no way back to the previous versions of you. There's no way back to how she felt or how she thought about the world and how disorienting that is. And I've heard people talk about it in the context of an identity death. And I absolutely think that that is a valid way to describe it. And I think when we're not supported through that, when people don't understand that, when we are maybe partnered with people who don't understand those kind of esoteric, you know, more spiritualized ways of thinking, then it can be so disorienting to become a mum. Because if you're not with someone, or if you're not around people, if you don't have support that is also taking into account that you just yourself died, who you were died, and was reborn with this baby, however you birthed your baby, if people around you aren't understanding like the chasm that you've just crossed, it is so lonely and it is so detrimental to our mental health. And I think, you know, what we talk about in this day and age of postpartum depression is, people talk about it and say it's postpartum depletion and we're so depleted, but also we're so disconnected and we aren't being supported in a way that takes into account the incredible journey and the incredible changes in our identity. And when that's not acknowledged, I think that just causes so much sickness.
It does, doesn't it? And it's like the gateway into that dis-ease that we feel, because anxiety and depression are rising. Like,
absolutely. I saw a quote this morning on a publication that I was reading that said, we've had 100 years of psychotherapy and everyone's getting worse. Which, I mean, there's so many factors at play, that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, if the people around you are treating you as if you just, well, you know, once your 6 weeks is up, postpartum's done, and you just need to get back to it, and then 3 months later you need to go back to work and you just need to function as you were, you can't function as you were because that person doesn't exist anymore. And so it's like endlessly trying to shove you know, this amazing star-shaped block you've become back through the round hole, and it doesn't fit. And everyone around you is telling you that it should fit and it doesn't.
Yeah.
And everyone's telling you that if it doesn't fit, then there's something wrong with you, when really, you know, your environment hasn't changed to fit you. Something I teach so much in coaching, once we take someone through a breakthrough, that's all well and good, but we then have to create a supportive environment, because if you don't have a supportive environment, you are ending up isolated, and isolation and disconnection is a perfect breeding ground for mental ill health and, you know, depression and anxiety. And, you know, so much of what I talk about with, whether it's clients or friends and family, and something I'm so passionate about, is when people tell me, I need to stop feeling like this. I shouldn't feel this way. I should be happier. I should be enjoying, you know, this thing that I'm doing. Like, you shouldn't be feeling anything other than what you're feeling. You need to actually just feel the feeling. Great quote from a psychotherapist, Marissa Pia, who I've listened to a lot, is you need to feel the feeling until it no longer requires to be felt. Because your feeling is like the truest thing you have. It's your greatest barometer. And I think a lot of the pain that happens in postpartum and the pain that happens in life is when we are rejecting or thinking it should be different. How we feel should be different. If you want to feel different, you have to experience the feeling first. You have to understand it. And only then can you either move through it or make changes in order to change it.
Yeah, that's so true. Just to like embrace the stage you're at, or the cycle, or yeah, it's so true. Yeah, I love that. That's a beautiful quote. Thank you. Very, I mean, like, so many insights there.
I cover oceans.
Yes. And I wonder if you have any thoughts on the maternity system where you live, or, you know, in Victoria even. Do you, like, what, how do you think that we could do better?
I think that something that I see, and it could be just the maternity system, but I think it's, I mean, it's health in general, it's government, it's business, it's everywhere we have structures and leadership that is out of date.
Okay.
And, you know, something I experienced when we had our post-birth transfer was coming up against a pediatrician who didn't like to be questioned. And to me, that is just simply an example of incredibly poor and out-of-date leadership. And I think that is that in itself. If we could change the way we lead, if we could change the way we do things top down, like, it's very easy to rest on the laurels of what's come before. But I think the evidence that we're starting to see is, you know, across maternity systems, but across everything, is that this next generation, Gen Z, is coming up to adulthood in a world where we're actually finding that they're having worse health outcomes, worse financial outcomes. They're having worse outcomes in terms of mental health than their predecessors, than their parents. And so I think for me, and especially in the places and spaces I work in and the context that I teach in, to me, it's poor leadership. A good leader can admit when they're wrong. A good leader can admit when things need to change. A good leader can look out at what's happening and take responsibility for it. A bad leader shifts the focus from them to external circumstances, or shifts the focus from them to the people beneath them. And I think if we could change the way we lead, which, you know, maybe that has implications for changing the way that we're learning, changing the way that we're schooling, teaching people to be more self-responsible, I think that would have huge implications. So for me, I mean, everything I do is at the meta level. It's like, I can't just look at the small little, you know, it'd be great if we had home birthing programs in every hospital. It'd be great if every hospital midwife had to do a year as a home birth midwife. There's a lot of small tangible changes. It'd be great if we could have trauma informed obstetrics, where shoving your hand up a woman's vagina without asking for consent, or cutting her, or doing things was understood to be assault. Those things, I think, you know, you can make small tangible changes at the ground level, but to me, to have real change, and like I said at the start, you know, I do everything from that greater zoomed out that zoomed out place, to me, it's poor leadership.
Yeah.
And if we could change the way we lead, and I think that is happening. I think the more we have baby boomers and even like older post-war, you know, the real oldies in the system. I don't want to be ageist, but
authoritarian type people.
Yeah. The more they fade out of the system and we bring in a new generation, I think the more success we're going to have. But there's still, you know, the faults of the way we train people, the way people are learning to move into the system, and, you know, a lot about the way we school teaches people not to question what they're doing and not to question what they learned. And those are the exact kind of skills that we need when it comes to good leadership.
Yeah, we do. And I learned recently that, like, doctors, they don't even do one section of mental health or anything in their training. Like, so ridiculous, isn't it?
It's insane, especially, I mean, there's so many crossovers. And I think what we're learning, and if you're in, you know, the personal development world, we see a lot of research coming out around the crossover between, like, physical health, mental health, the food we eat, the fact that our gut is our second brain, the impact of, you know, our nutrition on our psychology, the way we're destroying our gut microbiome with medications. There's so much happening that is just, you know, I feel like I definitely value the skills of, you know, I have a great GP and I have some great people that I am supported by who are in the medico field. But I think on the whole, we've really compartmentalized everything to do with the self. You know, you go here for your brain doctor for,
can you just repeat that? It just stalled. Can you just repeat it?
Like, you go to one place for your brain doctor, you go to one place for your body doctor, you go to one place to learn about food, you go to another place to learn about exercise, when really it is a singular experience, this life in this body. And so to compartmentalize your health into all these often contradictory facets, you know, the doctor is going to give you antibiotics that contradict the information the naturopathist, the naturopath gives you, which is going to contradict the information that maybe your personal trainer gives you, which is going to contradict the information that your osteo gave you.
Yes.
And no wonder we're doing nothing, getting confused and just sitting and scrolling on social media because we don't know what to do.
Numbing out
because we're overwhelmed.
Yeah, and I was talking about this the other day, like, even how offerings and, like, stuff that I want to do, I can't see it because I don't look, or someone doesn't send it to me directly, I'll miss it. Like,
absolutely. Part of the reason why I'm wanting to move off social media, and I'm moving onto a platform, I'm going to experiment for 12 months on a platform called Substack, which it's online, but I don't consider it to be social media because it's essentially
a
blogging
website kind of thing.
But the great thing about it is I can write my content that I, you know, I'm behaving on this when I launch it and when I show it to people. Essentially, I'm going to be behaving on that the same way I was on Instagram, doing videos. It has capacity for audio, so I can upload, you know, my meditations, I can upload my visualizations, I can upload little sermons that I love to just give about the things that are important to me, because I can just, you know, I think of an idea and I can talk for 20 minutes on that idea. And there's a lot of things that weren't available to me anymore on social media.
It's getting a lot more constrained, isn't it? Like,
it's not even that. It's that I didn't even have time to be creative because I was spending all of my time thinking, when should I post? What time should I post?
Yeah.
How do I cut that written bit down so that it fits in a caption? And I don't want to cut it down because I write and write and write and write and write. Like, I can just write for days. How do I fit what I want to say into a 15-second clip or a 1-minute clip? And now the captions aren't working. Now this and this. And so there wasn't even any time for creativity.
Because all it was the time, really limiting, wasn't it?
Absolutely. It's all taken up by the logistics. So moving on to this other platform, which is going to be, which already feels so open and expansive, and I already feel this huge spark of creativity, come back. All I want to do is write, which, I mean, it's a beautiful thing, but at the same time, it's really hard when you have a child.
Yeah.
So I do little notes in my phone of like, don't forget you want to write about this, and don't forget you want to write about this.
Yeah.
But it's going to be so amazing because essentially it's as I was on Instagram, but it gets delivered to people's email. And so instead of people missing things or having to keep up with you, or, you know, what I found was often clients or potential clients or people who wanted to work with me would take a month off Insta and they'd miss something. And then they'd see me post, you know, later and be like, I didn't even know that was on. And so here I am thinking, you know, taking so much of it so personally, thinking I'm irrelevant, you know, I am not immune to having, you know, all of those self-limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think Instagram compounds that and plays on that. But here I am thinking that people don't want to work with me when really the reality was they were missing things. They were missing my stuff. They were, you know, I'd post about it one time and then think, oh, I don't want to annoy people, which is so silly. And they'd miss that one time. So I'm excited because there's already people messaging me saying they can't wait to follow along.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to just write. And what I'm going to be talking about is my journey off social media, running my business. I'm making the decision that whilst I could believe that moving my business off social media means it's not going to work, I actually have this feeling, this inkling that it's actually going to work better. Things are going to be better. Things are going to be easier. And if it's easier, it's going to be more successful. And so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so good. I'm so impressed. You've inspired me.
Well, that would be an amazing thing, you know, people following along. And one of the things I'm going to do is share every month, like have a huge document of resources, of audios, of podcasts, of books, everything that I'm doing to learn to run my business off social media. And I think for people who have maybe felt like, oh, I'd love to do that, but I just can't, following along and having someone else guide you through that journey or support you through that journey, or someone who's actually in the know going, okay, don't look here, look here, or listen to this podcast, or this was really helpful, you really should listen to this, when you've got the whole expanse of the internet and you don't know where to start, having a curated feed of here is how you can do the thing that you really want to do, that's going to be so helpful for so many people.
It will. And like, you know, this saying of there's no point of reinventing the hamster wheel. Like, you know, there's people out there doing it. It's just whether
100%.
Or not.
And as soon as you start to think that something's not possible, all you need to do is find one person. Because if one person is doing it, then it's possible. You cannot tell yourself it's impossible. As soon as you find evidence to the fact, you can do it.
Exactly. I love that. So how can people connect with you? What's that site?
So it's Substack. So it will be in the notes. I've sent it to you for the notes of my bio. But essentially, it's a platform called Substack.
Yeah.
And I will keep my Instagram up with links to it. So whilst I won't be active on Instagram, it's going to act as a little portal through to the places and spaces where I will be writing my little heart out and supporting soul-based business owners and women in business and mothers in business to live a life on their terms. Because I truly believe, you know, I feel so deeply that we can't waste time.
Yeah.
There's this one lifetime, this one while, as Mary Shelley, the author, says, we have this one wild and precious life. And I don't think you should have to compromise having a family or having your child or having your job. I think you can have all of it.
Yeah.
Or I'll add to that, having your freedom, family, child, freedom. I think you can have all of the things. I think you can have all of the things at once. I think that it just takes a little more work and a little more courage and a little more confidence and self-belief. But it is absolutely possible. And if you want to have your family and your child and your freedom and your work, then you should absolutely be following along.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Bec. That was amazing. I really appreciate you coming on. And I hope people can be inspired by you, because I am. And make sure you follow Bec.
Thank you.
Well, what a podcast. I just want to thank Beck for coming on and being so open and honest with me around her birth. And it's never easy to have a transfer, but she really, you know, took that on and looks back on it in a positive way. So her mindset, if we could bottle that, we would all be doing well. And I think we can learn a lot from her. So make sure you subscribe and check her out on Substack. And I think I'm going to take a leaf out of her book around social media, because I think it is so detrimental now to our health and our relationships. And, you know, it's something to think about moving forward. I hope you all have a beautiful day. Make sure you hit follow on this podcast.